Phantom Doubleday Dell Audio Publishing presents Star Wars, Shadows of the Empire by Steve Perry.
Like a walking corpse,
Shizor thought.
Like a mummified body, dead 1,000 years. Amazing he is still alive, much less the most powerful man in the galaxy.
Shizor stood 4 meters away from the Emperor, watching as the man who had long ago been Senator Palpatine moved to stand in the holocam field. The viewer on the other end of the hololink would see a close-up of the Emperor's age-ravaged face, shrouded in the cowl of his dark zade-cloth robe. The man light years away would not see Shizor, though Shizor could see him. It was a measure of the Emperor's trust that he was allowed to be here while the conversation took place. The air in front of the Emperor coalesced and blossomed into the image of a figure down on one knee, a caped humanoid dressed in jet black, face hidden under a full helmet and breathing mask. Darth Vader.
What is thy bidding, my master?
If Shizor could have hurled a power bolt through time and space to strike Vader dead, he would have done it without blinking. Wishful thinking. Vader was too powerful to attack directly.
There is a great disturbance in the Force, the Emperor said.
I have felt it.
We have a new enemy, Luke Skywalker.
Skywalker? That was Vader's name long ago. Who was this person with the same name? Someone so powerful as to warrant a conversation between the Emperor and his most loathsome creation. More importantly, why had Shizor's agents not uncovered this before now? Shizor's ire was instant, but no sign of it showed on his imperturbable features. The Feline did not allow their emotions to burst forth. No, the Feline ancestry was not fur, but scales. Not mammalian, but reptilian. Not wild, but coolly calculating. Such was much better. Such was much safer.
He could destroy us, the Emperor said.
He's just a boy. Obi-Wan can no longer help him.
The Force is strong with him. The son of Skywalker must not become a Jedi.
Son of Skywalker? Vader's son? Amazing.
If he could be turned, he would become a powerful ally.
Yes. Yes. He would be a great asset. Can it be done?
He will join us or die, Master.
This was most interesting. Most interesting indeed. The Emperor finished his communication and turned back to him.
Now, where were we, Prince Shizor?
The Dark Prince smiled. He would attend to the business at hand, but he would not forget the name of Luke Skywalker. Chewbacca roared his rage. A stormtrooper grabbed at him and he knocked the man flying. 2 more guards came in and the Wookiee battered them aside. In another second, one of Vader's troops would shoot Chewie. Leia stared, unable to move, unable to believe this was happening. Han started yelling at the Wookiee, trying to calm him. Chewie, there'll be another time. The princess, you have to take care of her. They were in a dank chamber in the bowels of Cloud City on Bespin, where Han's so-called friend Lando Calrissian had betrayed them to Darth Vader. The stink of liquid carbonite permeated the air. More guards moved in to put cuffs on Chewie. The Wookiee nodded, calmer. Yes, he understood Han. He didn't like it, but he understood. Two stormtroopers jerked Han away, backed him onto the lift plate over the makeshift freezing chamber. As Leia watched, the words erupted from her unbidden. I love you. And Han nodded at her. I know. The lift plate lowered him into the pit. He locked his gaze with Leia's, held it, until the cloud of freezing vapor boiled up and blocked their view. Leia sat up abruptly, her pulse racing. The sheets were sweaty and wadded around her. A bad dream, she thought, that's all it was. But no, it was a memory. The man she loved had been embedded in a block of carbonite and hauled away like cargo by a bounty hunter, lost to her somewhere in the vastness of the galaxy. She felt the emotions well, felt them threaten to spill out in tears, but she fought it. She was Leia Organa, princess of the royal family of Alderaan, a fighter in the Alliance to restore the Republic. Alderaan was gone, destroyed by Vader and the Death Star. The Imperial Senate was disbanded. The Alliance was outmanned and outgunned 10,000 to 1. But she was who she was. She would not cry. She would get even. 3 hours past midnight, and the planet of Tatooine slept. Luke Skywalker stood barefoot on the Steel Creek platform 60 meters above the sand, looking at the taut wire. He no longer had a lightsaber, though he'd started constructing another one using the plans he'd found in an old leather-bound book at Ben Kenobi's. It was a traditional exercise for a Jedi. It had given him something to do while his new hand finished bonding to his arm. It had kept him from thinking too much. A guard had accepted Luke's mental command to allow him inside the giant tent. He now stood watch at the entrance, blind to his presence. A Jedi skill, that kind of control, but another one Luke had begun to learn. Luke took a deep breath, let it out slowly. There was no net below, and a fall from this height would be fatal. He calmed his breathing, his heartbeat, and as much as possible, his mind. First Ben, then Master Yoda, had taught him the ancient arts, but unfortunately he had not finished his schooling. There hadn't been any choice at the time. Han and Leia had been in danger, and he'd had to go to them. Because he had gone, they were alive. But things hadn't turned out well. And there had been the meeting with Vader. He felt his face tighten, and he fought the anger that surged up in him. His wrist ached where Vader's lightsaber had sliced through it.
I'm your father.
No, that couldn't be true. His father had been Anakin Skywalker, a Jedi. If only he could talk to Ben or to Yoda. They would tell him the truth. But what if it were true? It wouldn't help to dwell on that now. He wasn't going to do anybody any good unless he mastered his Jedi skills. Luke reached for the energy of the Force, felt the flux begin to flow. But there was something else there, too. In a place that was removed, but somehow right next to him, he felt a hard, powerful coldness, the antithesis of light, that which Vader embraced. The dark side. He pushed it away, took another deep breath, felt the Force permeate him. When they were one, he started to walk. The high wire suddenly seemed as wide as a public sidewalk. This part always felt like magic, as if he could do miracles using it. But halfway across the wire, he started to run. He told himself it was part of the test. He told himself that the Force was with him and he could live up to his name without fear, that anything was possible to one trained as a Jedi Knight. He didn't want to believe that he ran because he could feel the dark side walking the wire behind him, cat-footed and evil and gaining. Shizor leaned back in his form chair and looked at the woman standing on the opposite side of the desk. Guri was beautiful, with long blonde hair, clear blue eyes. There was a coolness about her that was easily explained if you knew that she was an HRD, a human replica droid. She could pass for a woman anywhere in the galaxy. She was his personal assistant, and she was the only one of her kind programmed to be an assassin. She'd cost him 9 million credits. She was worth every decacred. Beautiful and deadly. This was a combination he enjoyed. He himself was over 100 years old, but he looked 30. He was tall, had a top-knot ponytail jutting up from his otherwise bald head, and a hard body crafted by stim units. He also exuded natural pheromones that made most human stock species feel instantly attracted to him. His skin color, normally a dusky green, changed with the rise of those pheromones, shading from the cool into the warm spectrum. His handsomeness and appeal were tools, nothing more. He was the Dark Prince, underlord of Black Sun. He could also kick a sunfruit off the top of a tall humanoid's head, and he could lift twice his own weight over his head. His galactic influence was surpassed only by the Emperor and the Dark Lord of the Sith, Darth Vader. He was the third most powerful being in the galaxy, but about to become second, if his plans went as intended. It had been months since he'd overheard the Emperor and Vader talking of a threat they'd perceived, and now, preliminaries accomplished, Shizor was ready to move in earnest. Only an hour remained before his meeting. It was but a short walk through the protected corridors to Vader's, not much beyond where the Emperor's massive gray-green stone and mirror crystal palace thrust itself up into the high atmosphere. No hurry. He did not want to arrive early. By going there instead of insisting that Vader come here, he was giving away an advantage. No matter. That was part of it. There must not seem to be any contention between them. No one must suspect that he felt anything but the greatest respect for the Dark Lord of the Sith. Not if his plans were going to succeed. And succeed they would, he did not doubt it. Because they always did. Leia sat in a bad cantina in the bad part of Mos Eisley. Calling this place a dive would have elevated it 4 notches. Lando must have done it on purpose, picking this pit as a meeting place just to get a rise out of her. Well, when he finally arrived, she wouldn't give him the satisfaction. For a time, she'd hated him, until she understood that his apparent betrayal of Han had only been a ruse to save them from Vader. Lando had given up a lot for that, and they all owed him for it. Chewbacca sat next to her, glowering at the assorted patrons. The only reason Chewie had left her with Luke after the last encounter with Vader was to go with Lando to Tatooine to set up Han's rescue. Once Leia had arrived, Chewie had stayed as close to her as part of her wardrobe. It was irritating. Lando had explained it. Chewie owes Han a life debt. That's a big deal among Wookiees. It was no use, Lando told her. As long as he was alive, Chewbacca was going to be with her, and that was that. She didn't even speak Wookiee, save for a couple of swear words, but Lando had told her she might as well get used to Chewie's presence. Leia liked Chewie, but here was another reason to find and free Han, so he could call the Wookiee off. Then again, even though she would never admit it, there were times when having a 2-meter-tall Wookiee around was useful, such as in this wonderful place. Buy you a drink, beautiful? Somebody said behind her. Leia turned. It was Lando. Behind him were the droids, R2-D2 and C-3PO. R2's dome swiveled as he took in the bar, and 3PO, the most skittish droid Leia had ever been around, managed to look nervous even though he could not change his facial expression. Lando sat down beside her and leaned close. I think we've got Slave One spotted. That was Boba Fett's ship. The bounty hunter who had taken Han from Cloud City.
Where?
A moon called Gaul, circling Zar, a gas giant out in one of the far rim systems. The information is third hand, but the informant chain is supposed to be reliable.
Hey, we've heard that before.
Lando shrugged. We can sit and wait, or we can go see. The bounty hunter should have delivered Han to Jabba months ago. I've got a contact in that system, an old gambling buddy who does a little freelance cargo delivery. Name is Dash Rendar. He's checking it out for us.
Leia smiled. Freelance cargo delivery was a euphemism for smuggling.
Lando listened. Yeah, I'm afraid so.
Then he translated for Leia.
Gaul is an Imperial enclave. Got a couple of destroyers based there, plus all the attendant TIE fighters. If Fett's ship is there, it won't be easy to get to him.
When has anything been easy since I met you? Maybe we better go tell Luke. Chizor left his four bodyguards in the antechamber and went into Darth Vader's personal meeting room. The guards were trained in half a dozen forms of hand-to-hand combat, and each one was armed with a blaster. Still, if Vader wanted to harm him, it wouldn't matter if he had 4 or 40 men with him. The mysterious Force would let Vader block a fired blaster bolt with his lightsaber or his hands, and he could kill with a gesture. Fortunately, Chizor enjoyed the Emperor's patronage. As long as that was the case, Vader would not dare harm him. The room was spare. A long table of polished dark greel wood, several chairs made from the same wood, a hollow plate, and viewer. Chizor pulled one of the chairs away from the table and sat, allowing himself to appear completely relaxed, legs stretched out, leaning back. Somewhere in Vader's castle, monitoring technicians would be watching every move he made. Of course, he had Vader under constant surveillance, too. The wall at the opposite end of the room slid aside silently, and Vader stood there. Chizor stood, offered a military bow.
Lord Vader.
Prince Chizor.
Lord Vader, how may I be of service to you?
Vader stepped into the room, and the door slid shut behind him. He made no move to sit.
My master bids me to arrange for a fleet of your cargo ships to deliver supplies to our bases on the Rim.
Chizor's legitimate shipping operations were quite extensive, among the largest in the galaxy. Much of the money from Black Sun's illicit activities had been funneled into Chizor transport systems.
But of course, my entire operation is at your disposal. I am always happy to aid the Empire in any way that I can.
In the past, your company has been slow to respond to Imperial requests.
It embarrasses me to say that you are correct, Lord Vader. Certain individuals who worked for me were lax. However, they are no longer employed by my company.
Point counterpoint. Vader jabbed and Chizor parried. It was a kind of fugue in which each player tried to score, like two brothers trying to outdo each other in the eyes of a critical father. Chizor did not consider Vader anything like a Nest brother, however. The man was, though he did not know it, a mortal enemy. 10 years ago, Vader had a pet project, research on a biological weapon. He established a hazard lab on Chizor's home planet of Feline. There had been an accident at the supposedly secure facility. In order to save the planet's population, the city around the lab had been sterilized. 200,000 Feline had been killed by the sterilization lasers crisscrossing the doomed metropolis from orbit. Among the dead had been Chizor's mother, father, brother, 2 sisters, and 3 uncles. He'd been off-world at the time, cementing his control of Black Sun. Otherwise, he would have been one of the victims himself. He had never spoken of the tragedy. He had, through the offices of Black Sun, caused his family's deaths to be erased from Imperial records. And he had been patient, Chizor had. It was never a question of if, only a matter of when he would repay Vader in kind. Now, at last, revenge was in the making. Vader cut into Chizor's thoughts.
We shall need 300 ships. Half of them tankers, half dry cargo transports. Standard Imperial delivery contracts. There is a large construction project of which you are aware. Can you supply the vessels?
Yes, my lord. You need but tell me where and when you desire them, and I will make it so.
Anybody watching would see how eager to please Chizor was.
Very well. I'll have the Fleet Supply Admiral contact you with details.
Without another word, Vader turned. And anybody watching would see how close to the edge of rudeness Lord Vader walked. Again, Chizor allowed himself a tiny smile. Everything was going according to plan.
Luke stared at the little furnace, as if so doing could hurry the process. Inside, the ingredients for a lightsaber gem cooked at an incredible heat and pressure, intense enough to collapse Durasteel into a liquid ball.
And yet from a meter away, except for the red operating diode, you couldn't tell the furnace was on. Well, except for a little smell of ozone. Luke looked around the place that had been Ben Kenobi's home. It was a small place on the edge of the Western Sea, made of crushed local rock mixed into a slurry and sprayed onto frames to harden. Ben's house looked as if it could have been a natural rock formation, smoothed and rounded by centuries of desert weather. Ben, struck down by Vader on the Death Star. For Luke, the memory was equal parts grief and rage. According to the book, which he was sure Ben had meant him to find, the best lightsabers used natural jewels, but there weren't a lot of the kind he needed lying around on Tatooine. He'd managed to collect most of the electronic or mechanical parts in Mos Eisley. Power cells, controls, a high-energy reflector cup, but he'd had to make his own focusing jewel. Now he was melting the pieces of the jewel into a solid hole. If everything went right, he'd be able to cut the jewel, polish and install it, tune the photoharmonics, and then he'd only have to hit the switch to have a working lightsaber. Suddenly, he felt something. It was like hearing and smelling and tasting and seeing somehow combined. And yet it was none of those things. Something impending. Whatever it was grew stronger. For a moment, he had a flash of recognition. Was it Leia? He had been able to call her when he was about to fall from beneath Cloud City after his encounter with Vader. She had received his cry for help. He buckled on his blaster and went outside. Once he got the lightsaber built and working, Luke hoped he could put the blaster away. A true Jedi did not need any other weapon to protect himself, Ben had told him. A hot wind blew grit off the desert. In the distance, he saw a thin dust cloud. Somebody was approaching across the barrens from Mos Eisley. As their land speeder neared the destination, Leia saw Luke standing next to the house, watching as if he had known of their approach. Chewie brought the speeder to a stop. Dust kicked up by the repulsors floated around them for a moment. Lando hopped out first.
We would have called, but we didn't want to risk having our comm overheard. Chewie saw a couple of those new Imperial Code Cracker slicer droids in town, and he thinks they might be monitoring local calls.
Luke nodded. Good thought. Come on inside. Leia, Chewbacca, R2, and 3PO followed Luke and Lando into Ben's small house. As soon as they explained why they'd come, Luke was ready to hop in his X-Wing and leave. Lando held up a hand.
Hold on a second. First we have to make sure Fett's on Gaul. Then there's the little matter of the Imperial Navy.
Luke shrugged.
Hey, we can fly circles around those guys.
Lando and Leia exchanged glances. Whatever else Luke was, he was not lacking in self-confidence when it came to his piloting.
3PO translated. Chewbacca wonders if perhaps the Rebel Alliance might not be willing to help, given Master Han's services to them.
Luke grinned.
Yeah, sure they would. Wedge is in command of the Rogue Squadron now, and he told me if I ever needed them, they'd come running.
Back in his private meeting room, Shizor asked Guri,
You have assembled all the information on Skywalker?
Yes, my prince.
Very well. Let the bounty hunters know the price for Skywalker's head. Black Sun's hand must be invisible. There must be no mistakes.
There will be none, my prince.
Oh, and I would like to speak to Jabba the Hutt.
He will be online when you return from midday meal, my prince.
Now, have him come here, by the fastest ship. I would speak to him personally.
As you wish.
Guri stood silently as Shizor considered his plan. Vader wanted Skywalker, wanted him alive, to give to the Emperor. Shizor's memory of that conversation he'd been privileged to overhear some months back was that the Emperor very much wanted the young man alive, and in his command. If Vader should fail in his quest, if it could be made to appear that he had never really intended to produce this young would-be Jedi for the Emperor, if it could be made to seem that he had killed the boy rather than risk facing him, if the Emperor thought that his trusted right hand, Darth Vader, his own creation, had failed him, even the Dark Lord of the Sith would not be immune to Imperial anger. Shizor knew he had found the perfect weapon with which to finally defeat Darth Vader. The death of Luke Skywalker. Darth Vader sat naked inside his hyperbaric medical chamber. The Force was powerful, Vader thought. The dark side even more so. But he had never been able to use it to heal his badly burned body to the extent that he wished. He believed that it was possible, that with sufficient meditation and training, he would someday be able to rebuild himself into the man he once was. Physically, at least. He would never go back to what he had been mentally. Weak, foolish, idealistic. Anakin Skywalker had been much like Luke Skywalker was now, mere potential. Yes, the Force was strong in Luke, perhaps even stronger than it had been in Anakin. But the boy needed to embrace the dark side to achieve his true promise. If he did not, the Emperor would destroy him. Vader did not want that. Although he himself had certainly attempted to defeat Luke, the boy had held his own. Despite Vader's superior skill and experience, Luke had survived with no more damage than an easily repaired amputated hand. That meeting had made Vader feel. Not a normal occurrence lately. There had been the thrill at meeting a worthy opponent, and pride that the one so strongly opposing him was his own son. If Luke could be made to accept the dark side, together father and son could rule the galaxy. Vader waved his hand over the motion-sensitive controls. The lid of the spherical chamber opened with a hydraulic hiss as the pressurized air escaped. Vader sat exposed to the surrounding room, unprotected by the supermedicated and oxygenated field inside the chamber. He concentrated on the injustice of his condition, on his hatred of Obi-Wan, who had made him so. With the anger and hatred, the dark side of the Force permeated him. For a moment, his ruined tissues altered, his scarred lungs and constricted passages smoothed out and became whole. For a moment, he could breathe as normal beings breathed. His sense of triumph, his joy at being able to do so, drove the dark side from him as surely as light chases away shadow. The dark side eagerly consumed anger, but it was poisoned by happiness. It left him, and he could breathe no longer. Luke reset the jewel in the clamp of his new lightsaber and took a deep breath. He had the first few facets done, and now the cuts were getting trickier. If he tapped the shearing tool too hard, he could shatter the jewel. Chewie sat watching him while Leia napped in the bedroom. A speeder approached and stopped, and Lando came in from a trip to town.
I just got a coded call from Dash Rendar. That is Boba Fett's ship on Gaul. How long will it take you to get your X-Wing operational?
Luke put down his tool. Soon as R2 and I get on board. Leia appeared in the doorway and rubbed sleep from her eyes. Get on board what? Lando grinned at her.
It looks like we found Han.
Prince Shizor entered the visitor's chamber and looked at Jabba the Hutt. They were gross and ugly creatures, these huts, but no less useful for that. Jabba greeted him in Huttese.
Speak basic, Shizor said.
As you wish.
How goes your business, Jabba? Are things well in your sector?
They could be better. Revenues are up, generally. Of course, the cost of imperial bribes has also risen.
I understand you have had some dealings with high officials in the Empire of late. I speak of Lord Vader.
Not directly, Majesty. I recently engaged several bounty hunters to collect a bad debt. As it happened, one of them, Boba Fett, I believe you have utilized him yourself, managed to locate the source of the debt in Imperial hands. Lord Vader was in command of the situation. A coincidence, I am told.
You are speaking of Captain Solo, I believe.
A minor smuggler. He has had his uses in the past, but he joined the Alliance, and he owes me money.
Shizor leaned forward as if to convey a sense of closeness.
I have had some dealings with Vader myself of late.
Jabba,
Information, even the smallest details about the Dark Lord of the Sith, will be most helpful to me in my present situation. This deal with Boba Fett, has it been finalized yet?
Not yet, my prince. I am awaiting delivery of Solo.
Shizo seemed to remember a small and insignificant fact.
Wasn't this Solo part of a rebel force that attacked the Death Star?
Yes, Majesty. He and his friends were instrumental in its destruction. The Wookiee Chewbacca, Princess Leia Organa, and a young unknown player by the name of Skywalker all were involved.
Skywalker?
Yes, he thinks he is a Jedi Knight, so I understand. He was until recently on Tatooine.
Where is he now?
Who knows? He took his X-Wing off-planet only a short time ago.
Shizo leaned back.
It probably means nothing. But perhaps these things will be of use to me. If any of these people returns to Tatooine, I would greatly appreciate knowing it.
Certainly, Prince Shizor.
Shizor smiled. He was willing to bet the Skywalker knew about the bounty on his friend and had returned to Tatooine to wait for Fett to show up. That he had left could indicate a lot of things. Perhaps he had, through the Alliance, discovered where Fett had taken his friend. There was nothing to be done about that, if that was the case, but Shizor could increase his agent's chances of finding Skywalker. After the Hutt had left, he called Guri. She glided in silently.
Put out the information that those seeking to claim the reward for Skywalker would be advised to locate the bounty hunter, Boba Fett.
Guri nodded. Shizor smiled. When the Millennium Falcon broke from hyperspace in the vicinity of the gas giant Zar, Luke used a vacuum suit to transfer to his X-Wing from the larger craft for the rest of the trip. Lando and Leia preferred that they all stay together, but Luke had argued that if any trouble showed up, they would have two armed ships to meet it, rather than one. They saw his point. After he and R2 were in the fighter, Luke felt a lot better. Lando was a good pilot, but Luke trusted his own skills more. He kept the little ship close to the Falcon as they entered the system. What was Boba Fett doing this far out on the rim? It didn't seem to be on the way to anywhere. He saw the blips on his scope about the time he got the call over his comm.
Hey, Luke. Welcome to the end of the galaxy.
Hey, Wedge. How's it going, buddy?
So-so. Another day, another credit. Before taxes, of course.
Luke smiled. Wedge Antilles had been one of the Alliance pilots who survived the attack on the Death Star. He was an ace flyer, and he was braver than he had any right to be. Good old Wedge. Here they came, the Rogue Squadron, a dozen ships like his own. Wedge continued.
It's good to see you again, Luke. I hope you've got something interesting cooked up for us. Things have been a little slow lately.
Leia looked around at the cavernous cast-plast prefab building that Wedge Antilles and his Rogue Squadron had set up as a base on a moon in the planet Shadow opposite Gaul. Wedge led them to a corner of the chilly building where a table and a holoproj unit had been set up. A man sat sprawled in a one-piece cast-plast chair, looking as if he were asleep. He came to his feet and made a low, sweeping, theatrical bow. He was tall and lean, with red hair and green eyes. He wore freighter togs, a gray coverall, and a holstered blaster slung low on his hip. He looked to be about Han's age, Leia figured, and he had that same lazy, insolent look about him.
Princess Leia, how delightful of you to visit us here in our humble castle, Your Highness.
Lando made introductions.
This is Dash Rendar, thief, card cheat, smuggler, and an okay pilot.
Dash's grin increased.
What do you mean, okay, pilot, Calrissian? I could fly rings around you in a one-winged hopper with a plug jet.
And modest, too, Leia said. Dash bowed low.
I see that the princess has a keen eye to go with her stunning beauty.
Oh, brother, Leia thought. This guy is going to lead us to Boba Fett? Wedge showed them the holographic maps and recorded images of the moon where Boba Fett's ship was supposed to be docked. The Imperial Enclave was home base to two Star Destroyers. One standard destroyer carried a wing of TIE fighters. Each wing was made up of six squads, which meant 72 TIEs per destroyer. 144 of them, against the 12 in the Rogue Squadron. Well, Leia thought, 13, counting Luke's ship. That made the odds a hair less than 12 to 1. Dash considered the information.
If we're going to sneak in the back way, it'll take some pretty fancy flying, treetop-level stuff to avoid local sensors. Might have to drop into the Grand Trench Canyons.
He grinned at Luke and Wedge.
If you can keep the TIE fighters and the destroyers busy, I can get Lando to where Boba Fett's ship is.
Wedge turned off the holoprod.
Okay, I guess that's it. The boys will be glad to fly under your command for this mission, Luke.
Thanks, Wedge.
Dash turned to Luke.
You want to see something, kid?
He opened the door to another large hangar-like room and heard Luke exclaim,
Wow!
Leia looked through the doorway. A ship sat perched on the cheap plastic flooring. It had smooth lines, heavy cannons mounted above and below, and it shone with a dark gleam like chrome. Leia could see that it was a top-of-the-line state-of-the-art craft. Dash presented his ship as if it were a close friend.
The Outrider.
How'd you afford a ship like that? Luke said.
Well, it wasn't clean living. You like it?
Luke nodded. Leia could see that he itched to inspect the vessel, to climb into it, to see what it would do with him at the controls. Like boys with an expensive toy, she thought. She hoped the mercenary could fly it half as well as he boasted. Inside his X-Wing, Luke took a deep breath. You ready, R2? This is Rogue Leader. Lock your foils into attack position, accelerate to sub-6, and acknowledge. Wedge acknowledged Luke's orders.
Rogue 1, copy. Rogue 2, that's affirmative, lock and load. Rogue 3, I copy.
They were as ready as they were going to get. The Dayside destroyer lay dead ahead, and by now its long-range sensors would have spotted the incoming X-Wings. The latest TIE fighters were a couple of sublight units faster than an unmodified X-Wing. TIE interceptors were faster still, but they couldn't get to top speed immediately. So the Rogue Squadron would get one relatively free pass at the destroyer before the TIEs got clear and moving. Rogue 6 called out.
Here they come!
That was Wes Jansen, an old hand. A score of TIE fighters spewed from the destroyer's flight bay ports. Double up on the forward shields. Attack speed. Targets of opportunity.
Yee-haw!
One of the squad yelled into the comm. Luke had to smile. There was nothing in the universe that felt like flying into combat. Then he was cutting across the destroyer's axis, laser cannons spitting high-energy beams. No time to talk now. On the Millennium Falcon, Leia crouched down behind Chewie and Lando in the control cockpit. 3PO stood behind them, braced more or less in the doorway.
Do be careful, Master Lando. We're awfully close to the tops of those trees.
Ahead of them, Dash flew the Outrider, and the wind of his passage was enough to fan the tall evergreens below. Over the comm, on a shielded operations channel, Dash queried playfully,
You nervous back there, Calrissian?
Lando glanced at Chewie.
Who, us? Nah, I thought you said we were going to be flying low, Dash. We're practically in the stratosphere way up here.
Dash didn't respond in words. Instead, the Outrider dropped 4 meters lower. If a passenger on the smuggler's ship could have reached through the floor, he would have been able to touch the tops of the trees with his fingertips. Leia watched in amazement.
He's crazy.
Yeah, but he can fly. You gotta hand him that.
Why isn't he working for the Alliance?
Lando shrugged. He doesn't want to owe anybody. He doesn't want anybody to owe him.
He works for whoever pays the most. He's a good man to have at your back when the going gets hot. As long as your money lasts.
4 TIE fighters roared in, spewing death. Luke yelled at Wedge, Rogue One, look out, on your port, bearing 305. Wedge's X-Wing immediately peeled left and down.
Thanks, Luke.
Luke punched it, swung a shallow turn, and headed straight for the attacking squad.
Use the Force, Luke.
Luke grinned. The first time he'd heard that during the attack on the Death Star, he hadn't understood. He knew what it meant now. He spoke to R2. Targeting sensors off. Rear shields off. Reroute more power to the gun.
Sorry, buddy, but this way is better. Luke reached out. The Force was here, as it was everywhere, and it was no harder to touch it deep in space than in the swamps on Dagobah. He let it fill him. The TIE fighter suddenly seemed to be moving slower. Luke's hands flew over the controls, and he moved the stick with sharp and precise movements. Lines of fire lanced out and shattered one or two of the four TIE fighters. The explosion spat a hard spray of wreckage at Luke as he looped away.
I ain't shooting, Rogue Leader. Watch your back, Luke. You got a tail.
But Luke had already felt the approach of the TIE and put his fighter into a hard downturn. He flew an outside loop and came up behind the TIE. Luke stroked his fire button once, and the TIE shattered into expensive scrap. He hoped the Force would stay with him. This was getting trickier by the moment, and Han's rescue depended on them. Lando flew past jagged outcroppings of reddish rock that looked like giant fangs. The Falcon zipped through a three-sided tunnel with what seemed like very little clearance below and to the sides. Dash had said that there was a long-range Imperial sensor post at the edge of the Great Plateau above the canyon they were negotiating. The only way to avoid being spotted was to sneak in below the sensor scan. The outrider twisted on its long axis like a screw. Dash came on the comm.
Terminator coming up, and we're past the Plateau sensor station. You ready to go up top?
I was just beginning to enjoy this, Lando said, but I suppose if we have to.
They were approaching the night side of the moon, and while the darkness wouldn't hide them from Imperial sensors, it would offer them some cover from curious eyes. Around Luke, TIE fighters and interceptors swarmed like saurian hornets from a disturbed nest. The rogues had taken out a score of them, maybe more, and lost one of their own, plus another one damaged. Good flying, but given the odds, they couldn't keep it up forever. Wedge's voice came over the comm.
We aren't going to be able to keep this dance going much longer. Once that second destroyer sets up a south pole, we'll be in range of the guns.
I hear you, Luke said. One more minute, then let's make a pass at the Daysider and get out of here.
Copy, Luke. There it is, dead ahead,
Dash said. The lights of the shipyard blazed in the darkness. Leia leaned forward to see. There it is. There's Fett's ship.
Been fun, people. See you around.
And the outrider pulled up in a hard climb and rocketed toward space. Lando called,
Where are you going?
Hey, you didn't pay me to shoot, only to guide. I'm out of here.
Dash, blast you. Oh, dear, 3PO broke in. Lando's attention came back to the situation before them.
Company, we got half a dozen TIE fighters on our tail.
Leia was already on the way. I'll take the dorsal turret. Rogue Squadron, this is Rogue Leader. Break off your attack, go to light speed. Repeat, break off and jump to hyper. Luke intended to trick the Imperials by ordering a leap into hyperspace. They'd re-enter normal space in a few seconds, but he wanted the Imperial fighters to think they were going far away. The Rogue Squadron peeled away from the engagement in a shallow arc. The TIE fighters, who'd obviously been ordered to defend but not to pursue, allowed them to go. Most of them. As the rogues sped from the battle, Luke felt a sudden wave of something he couldn't quite identify wash over him, like a sense of danger that couldn't be ignored.
Luke. Obi-Wan.
He jerked the control stick between his knees to the side without questioning further. The beam from a laser cannon flashed past. If he hadn't moved, it would have cooked him. But there weren't any TIEs behind him, only Rogue Six. As he watched, Wes's X-Wing altered course to follow him. Wes, what are you doing? Wes yelled a short burst of expletives.
Luke, something's gone wrong with my R2 unit. It's taken control of my ship. My stick is dead.
To complicate things, one of the TIE fighters let loose with a blast of weapons, barely missing Luke. Luke pulled the stick back into his belly and hit full thrust. Behind him, Wes's X-Wing replicated his move, trying to stay with him, shooting all the time. The TIE fighter kept pounding him, too. Luke looped around, trying to shake Wes and lock onto the TIE at the same time. He didn't manage either very well. Another blast of laser fire stabbed out from the pursuing X-Wing and barely missed. The TIE fighter swung around. Probably didn't have any idea what was going on, but he was going to take advantage of it. Luke had an idea. It was risky, but his choices were getting limited.
He put the X-Wing into a climb, and at the apex, he killed his thrust and shoved the control stick forward. Inertia kept the craft going, but its relative speed compared to Wes's out-of-control craft made it seem to stop as Rogue Six rocketed past. The TIE fighter had looped and was opposite Wes, trying to track Luke. Luke punched in full thrust again and swung the stick hard to port, spiraling away in a left turn. The TIE fighter ran into Wes's fire and shattered. Luke jockeyed the X-Wing around. Wes copied his move and fired. Wes's ship hammered at him, splashing a glancing shot off the rear shield. Luke focused himself, pinpointed the weapon control nexus, and fired. A hit! Now Wes's guns were dead. He couldn't fire the lasers or the belly missiles. Wedge, see if you can get a magnetic line on Wes, and let's get out of here fast.